Court.
This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, hello, everybody. Pete Caliendo here, host of Baseball Outside the Box, the show that loves to interview baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge of status quo. We use a lot of common sense, and we go all over the world to find out how coaches, players, and federations work on their baseball skills development, growing the game. But we concentrate a lot also with experts in the U.S. And thanks for joining us. We are live on Facebook, live on YouTube. If you check us on Facebook and you got any questions, go ahead and just type it in the comments section. I'm looking here. We're going to share it. So that way we go live on Facebook. We are excited about today's show. First of all, before we start, go to baseballoutsidethebox.com for the audio part of this. It'll be up tomorrow. And YouTube, Peter Caliendo, Facebook, also Peter Caliendo. Do us a favor with all those. Can you help us by subscribing? And that way you get free updates on the new shows. We try to do as many shows as we possible. We want to educate coaches, players, and parents in the U.S. and around the world. We are very lucky to have over 100 countries listening to the show. I want to thank all of you for helping us. And, you know, if it wasn't for our audience, we wouldn't even have a show today. Hey, listen, man, I was excited about this show. Today we're going all the way to Europe, back to Europe. We've been there a lot, but this is a special place. Austria, what a beautiful place. I was there in Vienna. We did a coaches conference there. Incredible, incredible country. But here's a unique situation. We're going to find out how this happened. Here's a Japanese-born young man who started at 5 years old playing baseball in Japan, played high school, college, and then ended up in Austria. Now, taking the Japanese culture, the excellent training they do, bringing it to Austria, but then also, you know, developing his own skills and talents with technology and other things, adding that all together. Let me tell you something. I was in 2017 in Serbia at the European qualifier, B club. Austria won that. Not only did they win it, to go to the A pool, I believe, but we'll talk to our guest about that. But not only did they win it, but they won it. Here's what I love about this. They won it with all Austrian-born players. I was there a witness for myself. I was with a team from Bulgaria helping them a little bit, and it was an exciting event. And I watched this young man as a coach, manager, head guy do a fantastic job. So let me try to do the best intro I can here with Hiroyuki Sakanashi from Japan, but living in Vienna, Austria. I think I got that right. So let me welcome Hiroyuki. How you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And your pronunciation about my name was great.
Yeah, I have one question for you. Ego ga wakarimasu ka?
Yeah. Hi. Wakarimasu.
Wakarimasen.
Yes, I understand English.
How about this one? I just want to impress some folks out there. Nihongo ga wakarimasu ka?
Your Japanese is very good. I'm impressed now.
Love it. So I got to say a few Japanese words. I love Japan, but this isn't about Japan. We've done shows with Japanese coaches and managers, but this is about Austrian baseball. First of all, let's give the folks a little background. I mentioned it. You grew up in Japan, but you know, anything else you want to mention about your background in Japan, and then we'll jump into the talk.
Okay, so I'm born in Fukuoka City, Japan, and I started to play baseball when I was 5 because my brother was playing, so I was simply following him. And I was actually not allowed to join the club because the club team only can take the children from 6 years old. But I was always there, so they just took me. And I was practicing with them the whole time. But then we were, like the traditional Japanese style. We're running a lot and we're taking thousands of ground balls and so on. And I was really catching up with the older guys because they're also 10 years old, 12 years old. But then I was just enjoying there. And then I started to playing baseball. And then after that, I kept continuing playing baseball till college. And then 2003, there's this event for the you. I think you were also coaching some years ago for the WCBF.
Mm-hmm.
That was in Yamaguchi City where I was studying. And then I went there to help the organization for the event. And then luckily there are Austrians participated in the tournament. So
that's the connection.
Right, exactly. So I was there, I think it was like 3 days before the tournament ended. Austrian guy, the parent, came next to me during dinner, and he just asked me, "Hey, do you want to play baseball in Austria?" And I was like, "Okay, what is this?" You know, like I didn't even think about playing abroad. I was just, you know, I was just thinking about just being a teacher in Japan, and then try to coach Japanese high school team. But then this opportunity all of a sudden came up, and I was like, "Okay, maybe, you know, might as well try 1 or 2 years playing baseball in Austria and then see what happens." And then eventually now, I don't know, after almost 20 years,
wow,
I'm still here.
Well, you know, we tell our audience all the time, you know, a lot of young people out there that are in, just got done playing. Sometimes they get asked by another country, you know, "Hey, come play for us." Mm-hmm. Folks, guys and gals, take that opportunity. You're young. You got your career. You know, I know you finished college and you want to get onto your job, but take the opportunity. You never know what happens. Look what happened here with Austria. You know, I've got friends who joined the Italian teams, and all of a sudden they were on the national team. Then they were coaching a national team. A lot of great opportunities all over the world. So take advantage of it, because you only live once, man. And when you're young, that's the time to do it. When you're older, it's a little tougher. Hey, I got to ask you this. This is interesting. What positions you played in Japan, and did you participate in Koshian?
Okay, the first question. I was playing first base until high school, but then I always wanted to pitch. So after graduating from high school, I was like, when I went to university for the team, I was like, okay, I was pitching. So I just kind of, you know, lied to them, but I wanted to pitch. So I started to pitch there. And then that was one of the reasons that I was able to come here.
But and what about Koshian?
Koshian, I was not able to get there. So no. My high school wasn't great, and also Fukuoka City is a very tough city to be able to go up to Koshian, because you know, we have so many good teams there.
Yeah, and folks, so you know, and then I'm going to paraphrase, but Koshian is a national high school championships. Just Google it. You got to see it. It's incredible. There's nothing like it anywhere in the world. I don't care what sport. I mean, you're basically talking about a couple of weeks, 46 teams, 4 games a day. You got 20 to 40,000 fans a game in 110 degree heat, in a major league stadium, you know, a lot of fans, national television. So obviously Hiroyuki, you know a lot about it. You just didn't participate, but you know, what honor it is to be part of Koshian, right? Even just to participate. Here's what I'd like to ask you, and then we'll get into Austria. Japanese baseball, just because we've talked a lot about it on the show, and I know the Japanese are very cautious about, you know, mentioning something not good. So I'm going to ask you the good part. The good part of Japanese baseball that you learned, that you kind of took into Austria. I know you can't change cultures in Austria. You can't change people. But what did you take? Anything small that kind of helped you in Austria?
So at the moment, I don't know. Let me think. I took, discipline as a team.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Japan, like, we're always going somewhere as a team. We're playing for the team. Like, first thing comes team, you know, and then here, when I came here, it was, you know, it was kind of like a in person, you know, like it was like not like a team, but it was like, you know, player by player, it was just doing something. So when I started to coach the team, a team that I playing right now, I was like, okay, let's try to build up a good team. And we try to think about the teammates and all kinds of stuff. And then now that, I don't know, the national team, especially that they're really playing for the country and they are really proud of wearing the Austrian jersey. So I think that part of me was, a little bit of help for Austrian baseball.
Folks, we're talking to Hiroyuki Sakanashi, the Austrian national team manager. And I mentioned it earlier, they've done a great job, qualified in the B Cup, went to A. You know, Hiroyuki, here's another interesting aspect of this. Okay, you get to Austria, and you told the folks how you got there. Now it's your first time in Austria. Were you coaching the national team right away, or were you coaching a club team?
So I started to play first. So I was just a player coming over here.
Oh, yeah.
And the first team that I played for was not in Vienna. It's like 40 kilometers away from Vienna. And there, American guy, his name is Darius Smith. He was coaching the team, and I was inspired by him a lot. But then this team at the time didn't have enough players in 2006, I believe. And then I moved to Vienna for the team called Vienna Wanderers. That's where I'm still coaching the team. And I started to coach the team in 2009. That was the first time that I started to coach a club team.
And then you became the national team coach. And folks, so you know, 1987, Austria had six teams nationwide, only six teams. 1993, they had 50 clubs in Austria. So obviously the sport is developing. You know, let's talk about that before I get into what you do with the team, the national team. The structure right now in Austria a little bit, give the audience an idea. I mentioned 50 clubs, you know, what a club is and how it's situated in Austria.
So from this year, we have 9 teams in the top team. Until last year, it was 8 teams. And then one team moved up to the first league. And we're playing home and away, pretty much doubleheader. For example, like my home team has a floodlights so that we can play single games during like Friday night and Saturday afternoon game or something like that. And this year we try to add a little more games. So we eventually play 30 games, I believe. I had to check the schedule again, but we have 30 games. And then the teams are spread out in all over Austria. Mm-hmm. So I'm in Vienna, and we have about 5 teams around this area. So we have East Division. Hmm. With the 5 teams, and then Western Division, we have 3 teams in in West, and there's one team in the middle of Austria, so they are always traveling around to the west side of Austria. And then we have interleague, so that we Western team go to the western side once. Then it takes like 7 hours drive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interleague, that's interesting. And folks, I mean, if you know European baseball, it's set up by clubs. So you could, you know, Hiroyuki mentioned 9 teams top levels. You got your top level, you know, but then you have your underneath, and everybody's a little different, but you could have like 23U, 18U, 15U, 12U, but not all clubs can have that because they don't have the players. Now, I got to ask you, you speak Japanese, you speak English. I know in Austria, they do speak English, some people, but their native language is German. Players, because they're younger, they probably do speak English. How was that when you first came over?
Yeah, so first time I came over here, I couldn't even speak English. So so the coach that I mentioned, Larry Smith, he asked me a question like, would you like to go for coffee? And then I just didn't understand what he said, and I was just frozen, and I just said yeah. And then they just laughed because yeah is yes in German.
Ah.
They were like, oh, you already speak German. But I didn't really mean that I was going to speak German, you know.
Wow.
So now everybody knows me as an English speaker. So they even like the guys that I coached when they're youth, they talk to me in English. And I speak German only when I go to a restaurant or I guess school comes over here to learn baseball. That's when I explain to them in German because then it's easier for them to understand a little bit. But not that I can speak German very well. Still,
most of the players speak English.
Right, everybody speaks English, and they still make fun of my English.
Yeah, all right. Let me tell you, I wish I spoke Japanese as well as you speak English, because you do speak very good English, very clear. Hiroki, all right, now, you get to the national team.
Right.
And did you have to make a few changes? I know you can't go in and change everything right away, but did you have to make a few changes, you know, to build a certain culture that you were looking for? Was there some things you did to kind of change so you can help the players out a little bit, become more of a team?
So it used to be, before I coached, it used to be like this, let's say, national team coach was going to the club teams to scout the players.
Ah.
So that was back when former coaches were doing, but for me, it was very important that we play games with the team, even like with the candidates. So like now, like starting 2015, I started to coach the senior national team, and we decided to like play more games. And then there, we don't have a lot of budget to meet each weekend or so, right? So every time we go to a tournament, we put all the candidates together. Then there, we also have a small camp to just make sure that everybody's there, get to know each other, and then like, you know, simply practice together, play a game together, and so on. And then that got better, I guess.
Was there something that you had to do, you know, like training to maybe hustle more, or training to deal with failure a little bit? Was there something you had to do because maybe they weren't quite good enough yet in that area?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So the first time I coached, I was like, okay, let's bring out some like my, you know, experience that I had in Japan,
yeah.
Right? So, but then it didn't really work out. But in the beginning, like, you know, we were like running with the tires, or like, you know, like sprinting and this and that, all kinds of stuff with the club team that I'm coaching right now, right?
Yeah.
But then it didn't really work out, and then I also wanted to clean the dugout or clean our, you know, the equipment room and all kinds of stuff, but it was good for like a couple of days, and then after days it was just you know, all over the place. So
yeah,
that part of me was kind of like, I just lost that kind of me. But then every time I feel like I have to say something, like, then I of course say, but rather I'm trying to, let's say, like get close to their culture over trying to like overdo my culture to them.
Yeah. Yeah, we always say on the show, we've said it many times, you know, you take anybody in the world, pretty much anybody, and put them in Japan and expect them to do and train like the Japanese do. You know, I've seen it. I've seen American teams go in there and try to train with Japanese teams. Just not going to work out. You're most likely going to get somebody hurt too, because the right. Japanese are really too hard. I mean, they really take it to another level. What about any rules? Was there any rules you had to work around? And I think what you said is important, is you were adapting to their culture. What were some rules? Were any rules you had to change for the team or make any new rules?
Not really. So like I have our GM, general manager, and I think he's more strict than I am, to be honest. And what we're doing is at least that we always wear team gear everywhere we go. So
hat backwards.
Behind the hat we have Baseball Austria written, and we'll making sure that we always wear the hat correctly. That's at least what we're doing.
And how did you deal with when you're in a game or practice and you didn't like something that somebody did or the team didn't do well? How did you deal with that? Or how do you deal with
it? I personally talk to each player. So like for example, if somebody didn't do well, and then I just gonna go out there and just talk casually to start off, and then we just get into the topic, then he understands. As a team, I don't do so much, but I'm sure you know Owen Reed.
Yes.
Owen Reed is a great, great help for me, and he's a great mentor for all of my players. So he sometimes bring the teams up, and he's giving some comments or the ideas very calmly, and they're that way they're like, oh, okay, I got it, I understood.
Yeah.
And so on. Because I get a little bit more emotional when I start to talk. So, usually, so that part I need to change.
Japanese are pretty level. You're a little bit more emotional than most Japanese coaches.
Right.
Yeah. and a shout out to Owen Reed. Check him out on Twitter. He's got a lot of great stuff. He's currently in Singapore, but he travels the world also, and also with the Austrian team. Here's the other area I'd like to talk about, because I think it's interesting from the standpoint of you now have your national team and you're successful. You've done some great stuff. Now, if people follow, Austria doesn't have a lot of players in their country, so your selection is not easy, but you've done really well. What do you attribute that success to? you won the B Cup, right? And at that time, the qualifier to go to the A qualifier.
Right. So we were always in the pool B. So every time we had a qualifier, we always went to the final, but we were failed to win the tournament. So that was happening since 2009, I think 9, 11, and then 13, we host the tournament here. And then until the last out of the game, we were winning, but we just gave up two runs to give it away. 2015, we also hosted the game here. But then again, we lost we were taking lead in the last inning of the final. So we were very, let's say, disappointed and let's say sad. Okay. And but then the players really, really wanted to go to April. And then 2017, when we were in Serbia, everybody was like, okay, this may be a good opportunity for us that we are not in Vienna hosting the tournament.
Yeah.
So that we have a little bit of relaxing the situation. And then they were really like eager to win all the games. So then against Bulgaria, we faced you for the first day in the tournament, went very successfully. And there after that point, our focus was to win, how to win against Israel, because Israel was the team that everybody thought that are going up. So then round robin, we won in the it was a walk-off game. And then after that, we knew that who was going to pitch. in the final. So we already prepared for him how to hit against him, and then eventually a lot of things went perfectly for us, so that we were able to win the tournament. But then usually from here on, we're going up to April. But 2020 was supposed to be the Olympic
yes
games, so that European Baseball Federation decided to change the format, that we had to take the playoff series against Lithuania to be able to go up to the April European Championship in 2019. So
and you know what, you're a good manager, because you give credit to your players for what they did. And you know, with, and again, I'm going to repeat, with all Austrian players, I have a question, but before we get to that question, we got one on Facebook. I'm going to take it just in case he can't stick around. But the president of the Russian Baseball Federation, a great friend of mine, Dmitry Kislev, he asks, are there any particularities in the training of Austrian baseball players, the particular areas of the mental training or baseball language? Is there any, so I think he's trying to figure out, with your Japanese background and the Austrian background, you know, mentally, how do you deal with the training, any special training you guys do?
For mentally,
Or on the field, any special training that's helped you, your players progress?
So I'm coaching the national team right now, but at the same time, I'm also coaching Austrian Baseball Academy, which is I have now from 14 years old to 19 years old. So, and then there, what I'm doing is lots of, let's say, stretching. So here I see...
What kind of stretching? Explain a little bit what kind of stretching.
I let them do the bridge and like a split.
Oh wow.
So these two things mainly what I'm doing with the kids, because I see my national team players, they're getting stronger, but they also really get tired quickly. Like, more we play, they say, oh, this part is sore, this part feel tight, and so on. So then we check, I always check some national team players mobility-wise, and they're very tight. So, and then I have a couple Japanese coaches that I'm always talking with, and they're very... pointing at this mobility area. So they say if the mobility is not there, they can't teach the right movement. So I'm inspired by these guys, and I'm trying to implement into Austrian baseball now.
I like that, the mobility aspect, because every player is different mobility wise. So you work on flexibility and strength to help your players.
Right. So our guys like to work out, but our guys don't like to do this mobility part. But I think it has to be equal, and I think so. I'm still playing, so I can still feel it by myself. So if I have better mobility, and then my range. So let's say if I pitch, my range gets better, and then technically, I'm would be able to throw harder, and then eventually less injury, I would say.
Absolutely, I love it. And the other part, how about if your players, what sports did they come from in Austria? Did they come from different sports? They play hockey or anything else?
So mainly they started soccer, when they were young. And now I have a player in the academy that played handball when they were young, and then he decided to play baseball, and now he's he's 19 years old and he finally is reaching 90 miles fastball very soon. He was 89 last year, end of the season. And this year, I'm sure that he can make it. And some other guys, they also winter, a lot of guys play winter sports like ice hockey, and they go to play basketball also sometimes.
Yeah, there may be some skiers in there. I mean, so you're talking about multiple of players that have different athletes. I mean, you play hockey, you're developing different skills. I want to mention, folks, handball is not what you think it is here in the U.S. It's not where they hit the ball against the wall. Handball is a game like soccer, only you throw the ball to your partner, they catch it, and then they throw it to another partner, and they try to score on the goal. I saw that for a few times in Europe, and I got to tell you, I love that sport, Hiroki. I love that sport because it works on throwing, catching, move your feet. It's fun, right? It's good for baseball.
Yeah, and tough sports. It's very physical sports. So. Yes.
I saw young kids in Europe, 11 years old, playing it, and it was a tough physical sport.
Right.
So you mentioned some of these players, and I think it's interesting. You mentioned about the throwing, you know, reaching 90 miles an hour. We all know in Japan, the best throwers and catchers, I'll match them with anybody in the world. They can throw and catch with the best of them.
Right.
Now, how did you get some of the Austrian players to throw better, catch, or pitch harder? What were some of the things what do you focus on to get them to be better?
Right now, my focus is the movement. So movement, mobility, and strength. So if one of them is missing, and then I think this guy's gonna have, you know, like small issue here and there, and then at the point, they're gonna just stay where they are. So right now, with Academy, I have 15 years old, and try to do this mobility exercises that I'm asking them to do. Yeah. And he became very flexible. So like now he can roll around with the bridge.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and then he's able to touch his head on the ground. So I didn't really teach him how to throw or anything. I just told him to, for example, to like Derek Jeter. So I call some names, like Jeter throw. Then they go like backhand and then jump and throw, or Nolan Arenado throw, like on the knee and then boom, throw. All kinds of these like different movements to just like make them move better, let's say.
Yeah.
And then now that we every weekend with the Academy, we always do a pull down session. And then this kid, 15 years old kid, he was throwing like 74 last year. And then today, yesterday he hit 85 on pull downs all of a sudden. Yeah, so that like I was also amazed by him, just, you know, all of a sudden throwing that and
pull downs, throwing the distance that they normally throw in a game as hard as they can.
Right, it's like a run and gun. So they run and then just throw as hard as they can.
Yeah,
and then waiting.
What do you attribute the improvement to? Flexibility, strength. What else? What else? And why is are these players getting better when it comes to throwing harder or more accurate?
I think the main part for him was the mobility. Mm. So his mobility got better, and then he also said he was also surprised when he threw, because he didn't think that he was able to throw over 80. So, but then I was telling him like, hey, trust me, you can throw 80 to 84, somewhere like that. And he's like, nah, I don't think so, you know. And all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah.
So, you
know, and it's interesting because, you know, the Japanese, I've always said it because everybody's always trying to reinvent certain things, but the Japanese, you know, they're flexible, they're strong. And people say, well, but they don't look strong. Well, they are strong because they're real strong in their quads and hamstrings, their back, you know, I mean, they're not, you know, they don't look like Hulk Hogan. They don't have to. They're very strong in the right places.
Right.
And they throw a lot. They play catch a lot. And that's what you seem to focus on. You have that same focus here in Austria.
We don't throw a lot.
No.
But this right place to work out, that's something we also do. So we don't, as you said, we don't want to be Hulk Hogan.
Right.
But we want to be who be a good example. I cannot describe someone, but
Ichiro.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Ichiro is also a good example. He's very flexible, but he's not very big, but he can hit home run if he wants to.
Yeah. How do you get the Austrian players to be better throwers and catchers, you know, playing catch? Some advice on how to get players to do that better.
I say, don't look at the partner too much.
Ah.
if their focus is too much out there, or like, let's say I try not to say you must throw to the chest.
Hmm.
And then they really try to throw there, and then mechanics will be gone. So yeah. I just say, just throw around the chest. If the ball comes around there, that's fine. And then if they want to be more accurate, then start to make it a little bit smaller. But I'm not going to say pinpoint in there, because not that all the major leaguers can pinpoint the pitch every single time. So
that makes sense. I like that. What about the receiver? What do you teach the person receiving the ball to kind of be, as you said, play as a team? What do you teach them to do?
With the national team, I don't teach so much because let's say our history is young, but they've been playing baseball for quite a long time. So, right. You know, like for me, they can still play somewhere else, like Germany, Czech Republic, whoever the good countries in Europe. So I don't say too much about catching or like throwing to them. But then for the young guys, I try to, I used to say, catch a ball like in an egg, right? So like if you
try to grab it. So what do you do now with the young kids to try to catch that better?
We say we have a pocket here, but I'm trying to catch a ball somewhere around like a ring finger. So that they don't catch on the web. I rather, you know, let them catch somewhere in the palm. So then I think that's helping them a little bit, but then some kids are of course scared when the older guys try to throw a little harder. So like I've tried to match up the age group, and then, you know, they just doesn't have too much fear on receiving the ball.
How about using two hands always, or sometimes do they go one-handed? You know, a lot of young kids, you know, somebody's throwing the ball to them and the ball's over there and they move too late, you know?
Catching the ball is important. So I don't think the throwing hand is needed. So if they can go there with their glove and they catch the balls, I'm totally fine. Also ground balls sometimes, a lot of coaches say you must have two hands, but and then your range is limited. Rather going with the hands to get the ball first and then have a strong throw later.
Yeah, and that's why you were working on the Derek Jeter play and the Arenado play, because that's one-handed and they get a chance to use the hand. Right. Now, a lot of young kids, you know, they also have a little fear of the baseball,
mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, it hurts. And if they miss, going to hurt. Is there anything you do special there with the young players that may, you know, that you work with?
Whoever is really scared of the ball, like, I don't know, 10 years old or younger. Right now in Austria, by the way, we don't use the regular baseball for the youth.
Good.
Until they go up to U12, we are using this like soft baseball so that we have a little bit of, you know, care of the risk of injury.
Yeah.
But then still, if they're scared of the ball, we're going to go down to tennis ball. And if tennis ball is still scarier than whiffle ball or something like that.
Yeah, no.
So try to downgrade it to fear.
Yeah, reduce the fear. Now, the other part of, you know, it's interesting because now you got the hitters. I can't remember if most of your players or a lot of your players were left-handed hitters. I don't think.
We are mostly right-handed. I had two lefties in that tournament, yeah.
What? And I know, you know, you said it nicely earlier where you kind of train each individual a little different, right? Because some people, right, mobility-wise, are going to be different. Same thing in hitting and throwing and everything. Right. You're hitting. You didn't take the Japanese style because, you know, Japanese only have one stance mostly. Right. And then they so you didn't. You leave their own style alone. But what's some advice, some of the things you do work with the players on hitting, some of the things to concentrate on that are important?
My focus is, again, the movement. So for me, pitching and hitting, they're kind of same movement. I don't think we should separate pitching and hitting too much. I mean, if they have, I think different is they have a bat or they have a ball. Or one hand is free, but yeah, their movement should be the same, pretty much. Like I say, 90%, I think it's the same. So what I'm doing with them right now is to work on with the medicine ball. So like I want to have the forward movement to generate the power, and the medicine ball is a good way to know if like you're really generating the power towards the direction of throwing or hitting. So that's one part that I'm doing. And
I want to ask medicine ball. We're talking about big medicine ball, the small ones. Are they hitting it or are they throwing it?
They're throwing it. I want to only use the bigger one because if it's a small, somebody can just grab it and then this part becomes the focus. I mean, the hands becomes focus, and I don't like that. As I said, I like the movement so that, you know, having the bigger medicine ball, then they cannot hold the ball so that they have to, let's say, throw or shot put.
So you're using two hands and rotating to throw the medicine.
Right, right. So rotation is the key for me for hitting and also pitching.
Excellent. Now, we know this is always hard, and I'm not sure how you accomplished it. Some of the, even in the B pool, some of the pitchers, you know, depending where they come from, because folks, sometimes you have players that live in the U.S. or Cuba, Venezuela, who have citizenship in certain countries. You got pitchers that throw a little harder than they're used to, than the hitters used to. How do you train your Austrian players? A little secret maybe, how do you train them to work on the timing aspect of somebody who throws a little harder? That's difficult.
It is very difficult. I mean, good thing about now is that we, you know, each club team always gets some imports coming over and a pitch for them.
Oh yeah.
They are getting better. So
they see
hitters, yeah, our hitters started to see these 90 miles or 92, 93 miles fastball in our country. Not from Austrians, but these Venezuelans, Americans, they come here and they pitch against these players that, you know, back when I was here, none of them was throwing, let's say, like 85 or something.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, like now we see those 90 miles fastball and then with a nasty slider or something. So that we started to get, you know, get used to these pitches. And then for the national team standpoint, every year we had this preparation games, and there we only took all these foreigners to pitch against us.
Ah, good.
And they were only in short inning. These guys expect to go long in their club teams, but now like I have like 9 pitchers that go short innings that they really throw gas. Then there we struggle hitting. But then this struggle was, you know, great for us because then when you go to a tournament, it was a little bit easier to handle.
Yeah, you've got to be able to see the pitching, see the velocity, see the curveballs. You know, and I want to, you know, there's so much to ask here because the other aspect of this is, what about batting practice? Is there something, you know, and I think what's really helped you, when you're talking about the medicine ball throwing, the flexibility, all that, that develops speed, which then also helps them because they can see the ball just a little bit longer before they have to react. So right. I think that's helped. Is there anything you do in batting practice that's unique, different, you maybe focus on in batting practice to make them better?
Okay, so I have this very, very small, like, this size of sandball.
Yeah.
And then also the bat is this size. So
wow.
if you don't meet correctly, the ball doesn't fly. So for example, when we do batting practice on the field with these balls, not that everyone can hit over the infield dirt.
Yeah.
So I say always if they hit a ball over the infield, that's pretty much home run.
Yeah.
And then good thing about this little ball is that you know, I can throw overhand. And you know, like all this, like big sand ball, heavy one, I only see like under toss, so like front toss, and then they try to hit the ball. But this small ball, it's not heavy, so that I can always throw. So I can throw really hard, and then they try to hit it. But when it's harder, when it's fast, it's really hard to hit. So they like swing and miss, or they think they made great contact, but the ball just, you know, like
on the ground,
on the ground or something like that.
Wow, yeah, I love
that. It's funny though, because then after that they hit regular baseball.
Yeah.
And then I can't even hear the difference between the sounds before they were hitting this little ball and after hitting the little ball. And then you see the ball flies differently. And that's, for me, that was a great help for the team.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about concentration, fun, competitive, difficult, and all of a sudden now you put a bat with a regular ball in there. Now in batting practice, and I'm probably speaking national team, but in batting practice, do the coaches pitchers pitch, and do you do anything different there, or is it just regular, you know, 50 60 miles an hour batting practice?
During the tournament, we don't do anything special. We're just gonna have our rounds, like, started off with hit and run, try to hit right side, and then like I like hitting to the gap, of course. So right center gap to the next round, left center gap to the next round, and then mix up with a breaking ball in the round. Then last round, just free to go, swing away. And then sometimes I throw batting practice. And then sometimes Owen Reed throws batting practice because I'm left-handed and Owen's right-handed. So
yeah. and now in Japan, I know I've seen, you know, they have special pitchers for batting practice.
Right.
You know, I kind of like that because pitchers, you know, when you watch a Japanese throw batting practice, they're not throwing 50 miles an hour. You know, they're throwing not 90 miles an hour, but they're throwing pretty hard. Right. And sometimes they throw breaking balls and change ups and mix it up, lefty, righty. You know, and I know you can't do that because you don't have all the pitchers. Is there time when you take your pitchers and have competition with the hitters? That just a scrimmage game, or is it regular BP with pitchers?
When we have a camp, we always do a scrimmage game. But as I said, during a tournament, we're just making sure that the players are comfortable going into the game. So I'm not going to do any crazy stuff to them. Whatever they feel comfortable, I choose to do so. And then they are going to the game. Because I'm not playing the game. They're playing the game. So I'm making sure that they're the guys that are doing something.
Yeah, absolutely. They got to play the game. And I love it. Now, I love the part you said, you know, you're going to have practice games. What do you do during practice games? Is it they just play? And, you know, what else do you work on when it comes to that practice game?
Yeah, well, mainly I'm letting them play, but of course, we need to work on our strategy. So sometimes, like I set a situation, let's say, still in three pitches or something. Mm. Or like try to attack this batter with the breaking ball on the behind the count or something like that. Just to make sure that they have something going on. But then at the same time, I don't want them to have like uncomfortable situations too much. So give a short, little things.
That balance.
Right, right.
What about now? Let's use a situation. You're playing scrimmage game, and they do something wrong with a cutoff or relay. What do you do there?
Scrimmage game is a good chance that I can actually talk a lot. So we stop the play, and then we will make an adjustment right there. So then make sure that the same mistake won't happen.
So you talk about it right when it happened.
Right, right.
Perfect. You know, here's the other part now we're talking about. And we're almost towards the end, but I want to mention, you know, I want to ask you about technology. You mentioned before the show, do you use a little technology with the players? Because it's starting to really, you know, being used a lot in US and other parts of the world.
Yeah, so I have a Rapsodo pitching and hitting with me. Yep. And I have a radar gun right now. And we try to use blast motion at the moment, but somehow we still haven't used it.
How have the players taken to that? They like it? They want more of it or even? Or
yeah, they really like using Rapsodo because how much we talk about how they release the ball or how their spin is, it's really hard to see, you know? Like we can't really like talk about it if we didn't have Rapsodo. So now we got Rapsodo, and then all of a sudden they're like, okay, why does this spin efficiency is so low? Is my breaking ball right? Or something like that, you know? So then conversation gets more, and then their interesting parts are getting more and more now, so that they, you know, and then back when we didn't really see the speed of the pitch or anything, right? So now they can really see the speed. They can really see how fast is his fastball, how much his breaking ball is breaking, so that like they're really into it. And also hitting part, we have some problems in our facility, so that sometimes the Rapsodo camera doesn't read the flight. But once they use it, and then we can always talk about, okay, your exit velocity is this much, so if you try to hit over the fence like Barry Bonds, you won't make it.
Right.
So with your power, you are trying to make an adjustment on your launch angle, because it's not that everyone can do 28 degree launch angle, because then you have to have 100 miles exit velocity, but you don't have that, so you need to make an adjustment a little bit. You cannot be like the major leaguers all the time. So then that's something that I can talk to them and they, you know, they understand also. So yeah, which that's a really good part.
That's really good points, because one, you're making it fun. Two, you're measuring things. So that way the teaching is faster, because now they need to work on. And, you know, I love the hitting part, because of the fact that if you're indoors, at least you can see where the ball went or get an idea. Right. So people wonder, well, why do I need exit velocity? Well, because exactly what you were talking about, you know, then the angle of the bat, how you hit it, you're trying to hit line drives, hopefully. And by the way, folks, you want to check it out, go to Perry Husband's website. All you got to do is Google Perry Husband. He's been on our show many times. You know, he shows at the major league level, the percentages of ball hit at 85, 90 miles an hour, what they're batting when they hit it on the ground. So it's not always true what people say, that you can't hit the ball on the ground. You can hit the ball on the ground if you hit it hard enough. And look at the stats. The stats show it. And I remember seeing a stat that I think it was like 85 miles an hour, and I may be off a few miles. At the major league level, ball on the ground, the guys are hitting over 300. I mean, that's on an 85 mile an hour fastball with very good fielders. So I'm speaking to the audience, our coaches out there. There's some great stuff out there. And, you know, Hiroyuki, you know, he brought up some great points here. The academy you have, here's the other part. Is it like, you know, the other academies where kids come and live there, or do they come back and forth?
So we are collaborated with the school in Vienna. So I have right now 16 kids that go into this school, but they live their own town. So some guys live in Vienna, some guys live in 40 kilometers away from Vienna. And then we have three times practice at the moment in indoor.
Yeah, you know, folks, so you know, the academies, you know, they're all over Europe, all over the world, actually, have started. I know Major League Baseball supports a lot of the academies. What's great about them is that basically they bring in, you know, certain age groups, and some of them you can live there, but that, you know, they might bring in players from different areas of the country that are your better players too. And they're trying to, you know, give them a little bit more advanced training and competition, and then MLB hopefully can see them later. I remember, and I want to mention to the audience, you know, Cuba's had academies for the last 25 years, not longer, all over Cuba. They were one of the very first ones to actually have academies in the world. You know, with your academies, you know, it's interesting, because you almost have to have pretty serious players that want to come there.
That's what we want. But it's not that it's happening all the time. I mean, the kids wanted to come here, come to the academy, and, you know, but then some kids still don't have a clear goal for, you know, for baseball, right? So my focus right now is to set the goal for everyone. So like every month we're talking about their goals. So last month we set the goal for long-term goal, this season goal, and monthly goal. And then this month again, we have to have some feedback from last month if their goal was successful last month. If not, then we try to, you know, make it better. We're not gonna downgrade their goal. We try to make their goals higher and higher. So my hope is that one day some Austrian player can go up to a professional league, so that kids can look up on him, that can be also their goal.
I want to give a shout out to our good friend Randall Arms. He wants to remind me, yes, in Mexico. How do I forget Mexico? Another great country for baseball. I can't mention them all the time, but you know, academies all over Mexico for young players, some of the top players.
Mexican Academy was really good. I was there once with the Austrian national team, U23, for the World Cup. And we were able to use Monterrey facility, I believe. And then we play against their 15 years old academy team.
Nice.
It was really good. We're always super shocked.
Very good. And then that's a great thing, Randall. See, and we do know about the pro level league in Mexican League Academy. It says here the young players live there. So they actually get their players to live there. And that's awesome. You know, when we talk about, and I will close it off here soon, but when we talk about the national team goal, I like to hear that about the pro league, because if all of a sudden there is a pro league, I know pro leagues are starting up in different countries. There's that opportunity right now. They're one of the big goals is probably the national teams, right? That gives young kids a chance to strive for some career.
Right. So when we set up their goals, everyone has a goal to be able to play in the national team. So then I already have some national team players in the academy. So I'm always pushing them to act like the national team player, you know? But then it's very difficult because they're still young. I mean, the oldest guy is 20 years old. He's in the military, but he's actually able to practice. So I'm always pushing these guys. All right, okay, hey. These guys really want to be part of the national team in future. So you guys also act like you guys are the ones that they are looking up to. So
what are you working towards now? What's the next step, the next event that you have to prepare for the national team?
We got the European Championship in September in Torino, Italy. And that's where we're going to prepare. And Wednesday, our groups are set up, and we're going to face Italy, Belgium, and the winner of the qualifier group in Lithuania.
Wow.
So we already have the opponents, and 2019, we lost against Italy and Belgium. So this time, hopefully we can do something different.
Yeah, matter of fact, I spent a long time ago in the 80s coaching in Belgium. Loved it. Fantastic people. Small country, not a lot of players, but they can play. Sven Henriks, a shout out to him, does a great job with
the Sven, yes.
Sven was our first baseman on the national team. Great guy, great person. He's done a great job there. All right, man, this has been awesome. Hiroyuki, tell the audience anything else about Austrian baseball that you wanted to mention, or any advice to our players, coaches, parents when it comes to baseball?
So here, baseball is not very famous, but the players that are playing here is very humped, very excited to play, excited to come to the field and, you know, play ball, meeting their teammates, friends, or even the opponent that's playing against. You know, every time I see them playing, I'm really excited to see how much they can develop in future, especially all these young guys that I coach in the academy. So hopefully one day somebody from us can go up to the professional league, and then now they listen to this podcast and they say, oh, okay, this kid was the guy that I was talking about, or something like that. Yes. Hopefully that day will come in a few years.
Well, Hiroyuki, you keep up the great work that you're doing there in Austria. I mean, you're working with the academy, the national teams, the club. You're doing a lot of great work there. You and your coaches, I know Owen Reed's part of that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been fantastic.
I thank you too. It was a lot of fun.
All right, now I did mess up Hiroyuki's name a couple times. I apologize. Special thank you to Hiroyuki Sakanashi. I'm there in Austria, the national team coach. Special thanks to Brian Kroc, our producer. with the Lineup Media Group. And of course, special thank you to everybody in the U.S. and around the world for joining us. Don't forget, go to Baseball Outside the Box, get the audio part, subscribe. YouTube, Peter Caliendo, Facebook, Peter Caliendo, subscribe to both. That helps get the show out. If you got a show that you want to listen to, if somebody you want us to interview, let us know. Email me, caliendo19@gmail.com. I will always research that person and see if it fits perfect with the show, because we want our audience in the U.S. and around the world to continue to learn and learn and learn. All it does is help the game worldwide develop. And remember, develop the game from the grassroots level. You can concentrate at the national team also. So, folks, thank you very much for joining us again in the U.S. and around the world. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Stay healthy. Stay safe. God bless you. We'll see you on the field, and we'll see you on the next show.